welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who taught himself to drive by watching clips from Halloween 5. It's Adam Clement.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Oh, I'm living a dream. So, you have all the Halloween movies to pick from. You know, you have Halloween, where he drives long distances, Halloween H2O, Halloween 4, and you chose to teach yourself how to drive by watching clips from Halloween 5. Can you explain? Because Adam and I went to grad school together, and you'd be driving around campus in a souped-up muscle car. Every time a green light happened, you'd peel out. You're getting new tires every month. You're wearing a mask. You called it your driving mask while you were going around. One time you picked me up. You're 10 minutes early. You just blared on your horn. So, I mean, why did you pick this movie to kind of learn how to drive?
It has some very good instructional tips. I think at one point, Annie tells the viewer, you know, speed kills. It's very important. I wouldn't be able to have learned without the tips and tutelage that Dr. Wynn imbues on Michael, who, if you're an avid watcher of the series, would go on to reprise his role in Halloween 6, although that is a different actor. I think that's Dr. Terrence Wynn for those deep cut fans out there. But yeah, there's no better way to learn how to drive a car, really, than through the latex Captain Kirk mask, even though I think that's probably illegal, isn't it? I think that's like a rule of the road.
Well, no one wanted to pull you over.
Right, yeah.
And you never used your blinker. Like Michael,
no.
Michael in Halloween never uses his blinker.
No, he actually is a pretty rude driver. Very passive-aggressive.
When he stomps on the brakes and just stares at a person?
Yeah, it's not usually something you want to do in the middle of the road, but I guess in suburbia, you get a lot more wiggle room to do those kinds of things. Road rage is probably more accepted there.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and do you think watching Michael Myers drive around in 4 films lessens his scariness?
Because
there's a scene in Halloween where he's staring at Laurie while she's in school, and he has to run around the car, jump in it, turn, like, probably kick it into drive and speed away in 14 seconds. So for you, when you were watching these movies, did you ever think, you know, he totally didn't hit that stop sign?
You know, that scene is iconic, and I'm really glad they didn't show that. I think that would have definitely maybe tarnished his mystique. But, you know, you watch that scene, and it is pretty incredible, because it's not a long stare. She sort of glances and then, you know, gets distracted by her teacher talking about fate, right? And then, boof, he's gone. So,
You want to hear something funny?
Let's hear it.
All right, so I wrote an article about this on the website, because last year I wrote about his driving in Halloween H2O. I figured out the long cross-country trip. But in this one, I wanted to know how long it could possibly take him. So I took my truck out, parked it in the driveway, stood where Michael was standing. Then I walked slowly. He couldn't have done it with that speed. And then I opened up the passenger side door and, like, scooted over. And that was a maybe. But when I ran around the front with the door, like, and I with the car running, I could get away a little faster. So that's the way I think he did it.
And you timed this.
Yes.
And can we get a time on that? Because you did this, I would imagine, without coveralls on, without a mask on.
It was 14 seconds, but I'm not very coordinated anymore. And he
was. You do work on films, and you help out with maybe presumably stunts at times. You're an athletic guy, so I would assume that any lesser person, us normies, may not be able to pull off these maneuvers quite as quickly.
I mean, maybe. So, He just has super. Maybe, do you think he jumped? I don't think he jumped over the hood in Halloween.
No, that's a Starsky Hutch move. I don't think that he did the classic cop butt slide off the hood. It just doesn't seem like his MO.
And I know this is a Halloween pod, but when I was researching the chase scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where Leatherface catches a sprinting 21-year-old, gets ahead of him, I set out sticks in my backyard and I timed each stick according to where he was. And when my wife came home, she's like, Mark, why are all these sticks in the backyard? And so here I am, just writing this article. I mean, but I want it to be good. I mean, he's running through sheets, 50 of them, and Leatherface just gets around him. And I came up with a speed that I'm very happy with. I can't remember it, but you should go to the website, Movies, Films, and Flicks, and look at the how fast is Leatherface sprint piece
I'll
I wrote.
I'll do that. And you have to consider well, again, he's wearing a mask of, mind you, human flesh, and then, you know, carrying a very heavy, presumably, chainsaw while wrecking that. He's an overweight man.
Yeah.
He's a cannibal, so I imagine, you know, a lot of that weight comes from humans. I guess we're a fatty kind, but I don't imagine that he had the edge on you in replicating this stunt, because you're, like I said, you're a very athletic individual.
But he also ran like 20 yards further than this kid, this 21-year-old in this movie.
Right, yeah.
It was fun. I laid out sticks in my suburban backyard and was running around in my car.
I mean, it's better than coming home to find a bunch of, you know, bodies.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, like Ed Gein.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, I should
of
just...
Of which the film is based, of course. Yeah. But, you know, I think Megan, your wife, coming home to sticks is certainly its own experience. But, hey, maybe she thought you were, you know, trying to emulate something from Blair Witch.
Put, like, a new patio in or something. You know what? In The Blair Witch,
mm-hmm.
and in The Ritual, there is an incredible amount of sticks laid out during periods.
All right. I see where this experiment's going, and I'm not sure it's in your best interest to strand yourself in the middle of some forest.
Yeah, you're right.
Constructing these, what were they even called? Like those little totems?
Yeah, probably just totems. I guess, yeah, you're right. I don't need to go to the middle of nowhere and see how fast I can build one.
I did as a kid, actually. I remember when it came out. Shoot, how old? When did that movie come out? It came out...
99? Wait, are you talking about Blair Witch?
I'm talking about the original, yeah.
Yeah, so 99.
Whenever that came out, I must have been 12. Wow. And I remember having seen it at that age, being very scared, of course. And then with my brother on Halloween time, fetching sticks in our backyard and taping them together and leaving them around. And I don't know how my mother or father really thought that this was like, oh, it's a normal thing kids do. And maybe they didn't see the movie, but I for one, as a parent, would be very, I'd be very perturbed.
So here's what I'm going to do, Adam. I'm going to go full Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm going to learn how to make these things perfectly for a year. Then I'm going to go out in the middle of the woods and build one. Then I'm going to count how many there are and the amount of time, and that'll see whether one person could have done it or he needed multiples.
Yeah, well, the Blair Witch works in mysterious ways, I suppose.
I mean, it kind of does, right?
Yes.
Blair Witch. I just watched Book of Shadows. I kind of zoomed through it for kind of research, because I wrote an article for Rotten Tomatoes that's out next week. Look for it. And I don't hate it.
It's a wonderful time capsule. I will say of the early aughts, it really sort of carved out and defined that sort of new metal, goth, grunge aesthetic that was really going, commercially speaking. And it was definitely a deviation from the original, which was very, you know, grimy in its own right, but in an independent film kind of way. This was very, you know, studio-y in feeling. At least that's what I remember from the one time I think I saw it. Now, you certainly went back and revisited it. I apologize for that, but you can elaborate more.
No, it's fun. It just reminded me, like, because I was about 18 when that came out, so I was full on in the new metal. You know, Jeffrey Donovan had this thing underneath his chin, this hair
patch.
That's
right.
I had the same thing. I had one, but longer.
Was that a soul patch?
I don't know. It was like an underneath the chin thing. It wasn't like, it was under chin, but
was
it wasn't a beard.
Was he supposed to be playing like a late teen, or was he in his 20s as a character?
Definitely in his 20s.
I'm pretty sure that was the first thing that grew in when I was hitting puberty, was that that under chin patch. So that's why I asked.
I got it. No, yeah, he was late 20s. Good old Jeffrey Donovan. All right, so the reason I brought you in, Adam, is
yes.
At first, when I kind of use you as like a consigliere of sorts when I talk about my articles, you know, when I write for Rotten Tomatoes or other things, I kind of ask you some questions.
Sure,
and
sure.
At first, I thought you were a huge Friday the 13th fan, which you are.
Of which I am, yes.
But then we started talking about Halloween, and you started dropping data on me that I didn't even know. I thought I knew a lot, maybe about the first one and the remakes. But you started dropping things on me that it just knocked my socks off. So you are a Halloween guy. You know Halloween. You're like an encyclopedia of Halloween.
I have to give a panel for work tomorrow on content and telling stories. And honestly, you know, that's my day job. But I also have the benefit of being, you know, that guy, or at least that kid at the time, and having spent an embarrassing amount of years in my teenage years, actually preteen years, to be honest, trolling the ultimate Halloween message board at the time. And I think it's since folded and is now defunct, but I can't tell you, you know, how many hours and evenings were sort of spent just discussing these weird They are very strange movies and sequels, and you know, our favorite characters and a lot of the trivia and the production hell that a lot of these movies went through. You know, they're not big budget, all of them, and a lot of them were sort of made in this sort of family business kind of way under the stewardship of the Akkads, Mustafa Akkad, and then his son, who is now, you know, co-producing with the Blumhouse team, Malik Akkad. So, you know, just having that sort of community for a couple of years, I would say, leading up to Halloween Resurrection, which, of course, was a very unceremonious exit for a lot of fans. Just a garbage movie. And I say that, you know, with some affection to all of them, even to be diplomatic, some degree for the Rob Zombie remake and its sequel. But, you know, again, you know, I've had the benefit. I'm not going to date myself here, but yes, I have stayed hip to this franchise, I would say, for at least, 15 years now.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think my first exposure to it was when I was 8 or 9, and you know, I was playing tennis with my parents, and it was around Halloween time, and my mother sort of told me, "Go, do you want to watch a Jason movie?" And I, you know, of course I knew who Jason was, who doesn't in pop culture even as a kid. So I said, of course I want to do this. And we went back to the house after playing our round of tennis. Sounds very suburban and white. Sorry for that. But, you know, this was my childhood. So we went back and it was on TV. And it wasn't a Jason movie. It wasn't a Friday the 13th movie. It had nothing to do with that. She, like most boomers, sort of conflated, yeah, confused, you know, Jason with Michael. So it was Halloween 6 on TV. And, of course, it was heavily edited. But it was my first exposure to the series, and I, being a child who was a bit too young to watch that kind of thing, was very, very scared of it, and it stuck with me. As bad as the movie is, it still holds a very close place in my heart. So I had since revisited all the movies very quickly after seeing that, and just sort of became a huge fan of all that stuff. And I remember buying all the movies on VHS from local video stores back when those were still a thing.
Heck yeah.
And, you know, I think I've bought each movie several times on different formats following, but those VHS originals, I think, have become something of a collector's novelty item now, and I still have those. They mean a lot to me.
So, you know all about this stuff. So, of course, in my weird brain, I'm like, hey, Adam, come on the podcast and let's talk about the jerky moments of Michael Myers.
Right. So you could, and there's a lot.
You know, you could sit here and just you led me to the documentary about 4, 5, and 6, but you could sit here and give us an entire history of the Halloween world. And I realized that was such a great asset. I was going to take all of that away, and we were just going to talk about jerky moments.
No, I mean, look, there's plenty of those to document, and I certainly have a few top of mind, but it's interesting. You talk about this stuff and give me a lot of praise where it may not be due, and I appreciate that. But, you know, it's funny because this perhaps is the most nerdy thing I'll say on the pod, which is saying something because we're not even getting into it yet as I crack my knuckles. But, you know, I went to a few events, you know, concerts and stuff with fans. Oh, it was actually, you know what? It was a John Carpenter show. I've been to see John Carpenter twice in concert.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was excellent. And I was such a nerd for this shit. I was so on board with this that I recognized one of the producers, one of the fans, the diehard fan, Sean Clark. This is a name drop. I'll say it. Sean Clark was a very big fan of the series, and he sort of propelled his fandom into a sort of agency producer role. And he was instrumental, really, in sort of helping with this new movie, too, in a way. And he represents a lot of the sort of character actors and people who played Michael in the older movies on the convention circuit.
I worked with him for years.
Exactly. So you understand, maybe this isn't as nerdy as I expected. Yeah. But I saw him at the show, and I'm like, you know what? I doubt anybody else knows who this guy is. I know who this guy is because I've watched these documentaries. So, you know, and again, he was a regular on the Ultimate Halloween message board. So his name came to mind, and I, you know, sort of said hi. And anyways, at any rate, yes, I would like to think that some of that stuff rubbed off, but I've certainly known Sean.
Yeah, he worked with Norman Reedus. And then I started with Comic-Con Wizard World before Walking Dead hit big, and then that exploded. And so, yeah, I liked him. I liked working with Sean.
Yeah, he's participating certainly in the Halloween 40th anniversary they're having in Pasadena. And actually, shoot, that might be next week or two.
Oh, my gosh.
I really wanted to go to that, but, you know, work calls. So.
And plus, it's in California across the country. You're in New York.
Yeah, and the last time I was out in L.A. to visit my brother who lives in Studio City, you know, Pasadena and those filming locations for the original Halloween, they're a stone's throw away from, I believe, Sunset Boulevard, if I'm not mistaken. So I really tried to make it out there, and I wasn't able to. I didn't have time, but someday I'm going to go out there. And I know they do very frequent sightseeing tours of that kind.
You and I got to take a bag of leaves each, go to that location, yes. And just throw them on a lawn in July.
I'm sure we wouldn't be the first. Yeah, that's what they had to do with the original production.
And then just run away.
Yep.
Run away.
Yeah, you have to wonder how many, you know, film students and fans just go out there and find that shrub and just film stepping in and out. I imagine that has to be annoying as all hell.
I timed that out.
Those people who live there.
Yeah. I timed that out as well.
Yeah.
I did all the math for all of his time. You know, I realized when he's by the sheets, she never looks away. So he does a barrel roll when one of the sheets picks up, and that's how he gets out of the frame so quickly.
That's a great point. If you rewatch the scene, and I have obviously committed this to visual memory in my mind's eye, but you're right. She flinches and she drops the window, but she doesn't look away. Yep. So by the time the camera returns, he is gone, and we don't know what she saw. For all we know, he could have just materialized or disappeared rather into thin air. So
somersault.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or a barrel roll. One of the two.
Well, somebody, I cringed to even bring it up, but it somehow didn't dawn on me that made for a good meme. Somebody had shared, you know, something like Freak in the Sheets, and I was like, well, yeah, that's, I guess, the first thing that come to mind. Michael Myers standing in your backyard and, you know, among your sheets drying in the sun.
So this is a great segue to get into the topic. In Halloween 6,
mm-hmm.
We're just going to jump all over the place if you're listening.
Ahead. Yeah,
we're going to talk about all of these. So, you know, we're going to let this is a free form Halloween discussion about the jerky moments of Michael Myers, which will segue into kind of more information about Halloween, just like a Halloween primer via jerky moments. So in Halloween 6, there is an exceptional amount of clothes hung up in their backyard.
That's right. There is.
So
it's a lot.
There's a lot of clothes, right? Did he, like bed sheets and all of that, did he hang those?
Well, you have to remember, and if we're recalling the same scene, we may not be, but the tenant who occupies the Myers home, which does not look a thing like the Myers house, because I think this was filmed in an entirely different location too, but I believe the tenant there, the mother, whatever her name may be, she was doing laundry at the time. She goes down to the, you know, washing machine basement area, and then she, I think, carries a bin out there. And I have to assume somebody, you know, doing laundry would probably notice an abundance of sheets that weren't, you know, there before. So I have to assume that she just skipped like a couple weeks of laundry and just, you know, had to catch up maybe.
Now, it's not that late in the day, I believe.
Mm-mm.
So there's a lot of stuff, and that's a tiny washer. And when she goes to the washing machine, which I believe Michael probably set off, or Michael broke, possibly, she goes in and she looks at that sheet that she's later carrying upstairs, and it's dry.
Correct.
So she didn't have time to do all this other laundry that day, and I doubt that she left things overnight in October 31st in Illinois. You know, that's a lot of laundry for that little washer.
Yeah, I mean, it took me out of the movie entirely.
Did Michael Myers set a trap? Because he locked the front door, which is another jerky move. So when the character comes home, she's like, oh, dang, this door is locked. Because she did the little slider thing that you put in on the door. So she has to walk around back with all the clothes.
I like that she was in her sort of suburban boomer outfit. She's got this sort of ski jacket windbreaker thing on. She's got her mom Nikes or whatever. And she sort of does a little jaunt. She's not running, rather, for her life when she finds Michael. She's sort of like, oh, geez, got to get to that laundry, almost. So, and let's not forget, I mean, this woman clearly took her time doing loads and loads of laundry, only really to die. And then, you know, to spit on her grave, to borrow from a cheesy pun from another horror movie, you know, gets blood all over the damn sheets that she just spent presumably hours washing and drying.
Well, that's ironic.
Yeah, but it takes an axe to her, and Well, there goes that.
See, I'm thinking Michael set that trap. Because I don't think she had enough time to do it. So Michael went out and set up all that laundry. So she was really confused running through it. You'd think since she probably ran through that direction thinking nothing was there. Because this is her home. She has there's a lot of situational awareness. She ran through these things and basically got caught. Like it was like a spider. It was a spider's web of clothes.
You're right. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because it hadn't really dawned on me. I think at the point that scene happens, what I remember most is that she is an idiot because A, she falls, and then what, she loses her glasses, I think, maybe something to that plot point. But, you know, you're bringing up a good point where even in 6, as much hate as it does get, Michael is very tricky. He's a sneaky guy, and that's part of his MO. You know, even in the first movie, he likes to sort of arrange things, right? And I think in interviews, I don't want to say Carpenter, but people have referred to his mannerisms, right, as sort of being cat-like. The way he sort of admires his handiwork after the fact, he'll nod his head and tilt it in such a way to admire it. And even then, again, he's sort of just waiting for people to fall into his scheme. So it's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that when she is sort of going through that maze, right, of laundry.
So I do. I think he set it up. And then she walks around, another character walks around, she sees it all up. And I think the bloody sheet is gone.
Yeah, is it Kara, the daughter, who comes and notices? I can't remember. I know the husband comes by and obviously finds the laundry.
Which Michael Myers does.
Right, he does. He puts it in. He took the time after killing her and put
that
the
sheet.
Laundry. Yep. Oh, my goodness.
Bloody laundry into the machine to set up the dad later on.
And he just did it for shits. He did it to fuck with him. Like, he didn't need to do those sheets. And we know he doesn't care about the integrity of those sheets. Why? Because there's no soap or detergent in there. He pulls out those sheets. They still got blood on them.
Yeah, he throws them right in there. He doesn't care.
They still got blood on them. What good is that?
Yep. So he hangs up clothes, gets blood on them, washes, and then puts them in a washer to kill another guy and doesn't even bother putting, you know, soap or anything in there. And you know he does this again in Resurrection, Halloween Resurrection, I believe.
He does in the opening sequence, and I don't think that he goes to the exact same lengths.
But he does another load of laundry.
He does the laundry, and I believe in that version you do see something of an eye, so you're sort of assuming, or rather it's implied that he beheaded one of the security guards, which, okay, fine, the head's in the wash. I don't know how that's a substitute for detergent, but apparently if you're Michael Myers, you throw sheets in the laundry, and a head. I just think that's going to do the job, and it's got a tip for him. It's not.
They're going to have to buy another washer.
Yeah.
Because that's going to take a long time to get
their budget, for that hospital.
And that's a jerk move.
It is.
And the only reason he does that laundry and cuts a guy's head off and throws it in the laundry so he can wait on a pipe so a guy walks past him, and then he can show off his muscles, which is a very narcissistic thing to do.
Oh, incredibly. And the way he sort of hovers down from that pipe, mind you, is incredibly unrealistic, no matter how strong you are.
With one
arm. He's very level. And, this is not a tense shake in the world. He's just sort of like, I'm super, super powered. I can do this. No problem.
Yeah. And he wrecks washers, he destroys sheets, and then he's a narcissist.
Yeah.
I'm on to something, Adam. Can I tell you something? I interrupted you, but can I tell you something?
No, please, please.
He cuts 2 eye holes in sheets in Halloween 1.
Yeah, you're not going to get any use out of those anymore unless you're really going trick-or-treating. And in that house, you are not celebrating Halloween again.
But he knew that move would be jerky. In his head, he's like, I could just go in there and take care of business, because he does. Or I could cut. So did he put the sheet on? He puts the sheet on his head. Then he grabs some scissors. And then he cuts 2 perfect holes in this bed sheet. So he has to find scissors. I mean, do you think he did it by touch and then put them on to make sure they fit? Did he have to go through 2 sheets because he cut the eye holes wrong?
That's a tough call. I mean, you'd think a guy in a mask would be able to do the job just fine, because you have to remember, Linda doesn't know who Michael Myers is. She doesn't know what he looks like. If Michael Myers had entered that room in his mask, she'd probably think, with his mask with Bob's glasses on, she probably would assume that's Bob still. I'm not sure that the white blanket was really necessary.
I just think he hates sheets.
Yeah, well, you know, no spoilers, of course, but I do think that he uses that MO in the new movie. So I think only time will tell as to what we know to be his true feelings about Sheets.
I'm obsessed with his sheet thing now.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, he must have got that from that home, too. So not only did he ruin that, he stole other stuff. I mean, he has a habit of stealing from hardware stores, not just in the first movie, but in the fourth movie.
And Halloween 2, he steals a knife.
Yes, that's right. He takes it from a poor woman. He leaves her some blood.
Yep.
I think that's his way of saying thanks, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. If you're Michael Myers, that's how you say thanks.
He's bartering.
Right. But, you know, in the first one, he actually, there's some continuity error in that movie where he sort of takes the mask and the knife or rope or whatever Sheriff Brackett mentions, because there's a part where Laurie is, of course, walking away from the Myers home, and she's sort of singing, I wish I had you all alone. You hear him breathing, I think, through that mask, and I believe the sequence is out of order in a way that suggests that he had gotten the mask after that fact. But at any rate, definitely has a history of stealing from, I think, Vincent Drug in the original movie. I don't know if it's the same drugstore in name in 4, but he definitely takes that and scares poor Jamie.
Yeah, he takes a mask just to scare her.
And it's interesting, his choice. You have to consider this guy woke up from a coma. It's been 10 years, right? Where am I? Who am I going after? Okay, I'm going after my niece. What do I want to wear this time? I want to wear the same Mechanics coveralls. He decidedly chose Mechanics coveralls, which, of course, he would go on to do in this new movie, it looks like. In the previews, they reveal that. But he chooses, a fair facsimile of the original Kirk mask. It's not perfect, because all the masks after the first one are terrible, but you got to consider, what were his other options? Why didn't he choose those? Why is he so drawn to this mask?
He could have just taken a clown thing, and no one would have been hunting him.
Well, it's a good thing you said, because, Tommy Lee Wallace, the production designer on the first movie, who actually played the Shape, Michael Myers is referred to the Shape in the script, he played the Shape in a few scenes, as did Deborah Hill, but anyways, Tommy Lee Wallace, when they were going through the masks, you know, this was shot off season. They couldn't find pumpkins. They couldn't find masks. So when they went to the, you know, dollar and dime store, they didn't have many options. Of course, we all know by now that they settled on the Captain Kirk mask, which, of course, was pink and had to be spray painted. They had to get rid of the sideburns. But their runner up, and you maybe know this, was an Emmett Kelly mask. And an Emmett Kelly mask was a clown. And they said it was pretty scary. They said that that it was actually pretty convincing, and they were very close to using it until they had had Nick Castle try on the Kirk and modified that the way they did. And I think, you know, clearly they made a good choice. But it is interesting that they had been very close to a clown representation.
So he would have been stealing clown masks instead.
Yeah, and you know, clowns age in a way that's unique, right? You look at stuff like It. Clowns don't look the same like they used to. There's an old-timey kind of clown, and certainly there's this new version of Joker played by Joaquin Phoenix. I'm sure you've seen images of that by now, and you know there's a lot of ways you can do a clown. So I'm wondering if he'd be as consistent as a clown as he has Michael Myers, because let's face it, that mask is not consistent. It's pretty widely known that they've had a lot of people take cracks at making that and just come up with pretty subpar results.
You know what's crazy? I never noticed it. I never once thought about his different masks in these movies. Because I was probably too worried about bed sheets.
Did we derail from the bed sheets? Actually, it's funny you say that, because I think that the bed sheets is terrifying. As a matter of fact, when I saw Carpenter in concert, I did the VIP thing, which, you know, he's my hero, so I had to do it. And that package sort of included a poster that was signed in. The poster had, you know, Michael Myers in the bed sheets. And I thought that was so cool. Because that scene, Dean Cundey's cinematography, is just magic. That beautiful frame of him opening that door the way he does, and he's centered, and it's just the contrast and lighting is just perfect. And now, you know, certainly, killer walking around the streets in the neighborhood with a sheet on, maybe not quite as effective, maybe.
You could be tripping on it.
Right. Not the most functional. Practical, but you know, in that scene, it's iconic and it really works. I thought it was very scary. So who knows?
He would have to cut arms through it.
That's true. Yeah, you don't really stab people too well when you don't have sort of the range of motion.
It would be surprising.
Which is why he strangles her.
It would be surprising, I guess.
Yeah, it would certainly be an interesting MO. I don't think Jason's ever done anything like that.
All right, so another thing I was thinking about before, I just want to drop this on you. In Halloween 2, he writes with what? Blood on a wall, right? Does he? What does he write? Samhain?
Samhain. It's Samhain. The Festival of the Dead, and it's a widely understood cult thing, if I'm not mistaken. I won't get into the history. I'm sure I'll botch that. But yeah, it's this idea that, ooh, we're gonna give Michael some motivation so we understand why he's doing this. And, you know, look, let's back up a second here. We're talking about, right, a guy who's been institutionalized for 15 years, who killed his sister at 6, so boy, he's 21. What does he possibly know about Samhain? This is the stuff you learn about in high school, maybe college, right? And then he's going to go to, a school and make some sort of statement, right?
I'm pretty sure he was in solitary confinement, too.
Oh, absolutely. Whatever education he got was pretty limited to driving, which, you know, on its own is pretty buck wild.
Well, on the weekend they had golf cart races with the inmates. It was like in the institution, it's a nice great square, and they would just let them drive around in golf carts. And the winner got extra pudding.
yeah.
that's how he learned to drive. What do you like that? Is that a good theory?
You know, it could be. That could be it. I mean, is it really so different to drive around a golf cart than it is a whatever the hell he was driving from Smith's Grove Sanitarium.
And so he writes this on the wall. We have no idea how he learned it, but they have to paint over that now.
Well, how does that work with – I myself am proud to say I have never tried washing blood off a chalkboard, but I imagine a chalkboard might be a different textural integrity than any other. So I don't know. But, you know, what was it else that he left? I think he stabs a picture.
Yep.
I think there's a picture of a sister.
He breaks a lot of frames.
He does, but I don't know if it's framed in that. I just know it's a picture and it says sister, and it's like, I wonder what this means.
Wait, did he write sister on it?
I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering that, but I'm almost positive that there is a picture somewhere in that classroom, and I guess I won't speak more if I don't remember exactly. But if I'm correct, I'm almost positive that there's a picture of, like, you know, a family or some shit. And I think that that's their first wink, wink, nod, nod, right? Of saying there's some sort of connection, familial connection.
So he's messing pictures up, and they got to throw away chalkboards.
Yeah, I guess so. And then even worse, he's saying, like, guys, I'm going after the sister. Come on, keep up. Yeah.
So he basically leads them to what he's doing.
Oh, absolutely. He's making no apologies. And I think that's a classic serial killer profile thing, right? They get angsty and they start taunting, right, the police, and they kind of sort of secretly want that recognition, right, that valor goes with pulling this stuff off.
So he is a narcissist.
Oh, absolutely.
That's crazy.
I mean, this guy goes to the extent in the first Halloween to dig up the grave of his first kill. What could possibly be more, you know, egocentric than that and say, here's my trophy. Yep. Remember this thing I did? And then, you know, plant that in a way that says, hey, I killed this girl too. You're next. So, yeah, I wouldn't have a problem calling Michael Myers a raging narcissist.
I like it. Has anyone ever come up with this theory before? Did you ever read this on the message boards?
Oh, no. I think we were too busy bickering about the quality and our favorite masks and our favorite final girls. Got to get that right. And I know you
Gina.
Dropped something of a truth bomb yesterday saying that I got to tell you, and I'll let you defend yourself, you are in the vast majority on this opinion. But I'll let you state your piece on Tina from Halloween 5.
So I guess in Halloween 4, they came back and they had a main character named Ellie, and she...
Ellie Cornell, played Rachel.
Gotcha, Rachel. And Rachel was the protector of Janie, the young girl. And she's
the niece of the Laurie Strode character.
And she's fierce, she lives, she hits them with fire extinguishers, jumps off roofs, drives the cars. Really,
she's tough.
Yeah, very good, I guess, you know, lack of a better... good final girl. In 5... They kill her off, and they introduce
unceremoniously,
us
very, very just, yeah.
And that documentary, she hated it. So but they introduce us to a character named Tina. And I watched this movie, and I'm like, I like her. I like Tina. And I tell you this yesterday, and you were shocked.
I was, and I'm willing to concede that times change, and you know, if Halloween 3 is the cult favorite it is now, and it is, I will defend that till the day I die. I love the movie. Maybe Tina deserves you know, the same sort of second look. So certainly at the time, you know, with me and my cronies from the Halloween message boards, she was just seen as public enemy number one. She was just insufferable. Her voice was shrill. She, you know, didn't really give a shit about Jamie. And that's the point I'll take you to task on. You know, we're talking about a girl who knows something's going on, right? Loomis is frantic and warning everybody. And Jamie is very afraid. She's having these episodes and pleading with tears in her eyes, Tina, stay. And what does Tina do? She goes to the Tower Farm to you know, get laid, party, whatever. So yeah, I mean, I have no problem saying that Tina is kind of a conceited, you know, individual.
I guess for me, I really felt, when watching this movie, I kind of felt like Tina, she was stuck in an abusive relationship with an older man. That guy
was named Michael.
Yeah, he was very rude to her. He treated her badly. He was obviously older. There's a line where Michael Myers is in the car with her and she says, I love barbaric men. She's basically saying what that boyfriend wants to hear. So she is probably lacking, you know,
she's a victim. She's a victim of mental abuse, yeah, at least.
So she's trying to get, like, you know, his attention. This guy treats her horribly. And there's a scene where she goes to the house, Rachel's house, and she's all alone and she lays on the bed and she starts snuggling with a teddy bear. Like, this is her kind of showing who she really is. She's by herself, kind of showing that she's a young kid. But then the other girl, the blonde, I don't know her name, rings on the doorbell, and she puts on a face and runs down and goes back to her energetic self to put on a face for the world. So she's obviously has some depression, and she's in this abusive relationship. And so later on, when Jamie is saying, hey, please stay, she's just been so used to kind of appeasing, controlling men that all she knows is to go to that.
That might be the most mental gymnastics I've heard for somebody defending a character like Tina. I will give you that. And then, I don't know if a scene of her holding on or clutching a teddy bear really resonates as a human sympathy nod for me, but you know.
She began to show her inner self. She got quiet and was calm. Mm. And then there's a later in a line in the movie where she asks Michael, what did I do wrong this time? So obviously she is used to him treating her poorly, and she's used to thinking, what did I do wrong? But the whole time she's not thinking, maybe the guy I'm with is really horrible. So she's really has this like weird mentality of being treated poorly, which you can see when she is on that. So even when Jamie's begging, you could even argue that Tina, she's not very good at expressing her emotions, so she goes to this place knowing she's going to die to protect Jamie a little while longer. And she doesn't expect Jamie to come to her, which puts Jamie in danger.
Jamie's a kid. She ain't coming to her.
Yeah, no.
I will say the redemption, you make note of that. She does, you know, get caught in the line of fire. She takes the knife for Jamie.
She jumps right in front of it to protect her.
Yes, and as you heard from me and in that documentary I shared with you prior, the when that happened in theaters, the audience erupted in cheers. They wanted this.
She is a woman. I think she was let down by the institution. You never hear about her parents. You never hear anything. And she's this woman who she's not even related to Jamie. And now she's asked to all of a sudden kind of change to stay with her during this thing. But she just moves on from that. So I don't think I think what she does is very misguided, but I think it's from a really unhealthy pattern that has occurred in her life.
All right, that's fair. Perhaps so, but I think if we're going to measure dicks here on, you know, the mental institution failing people, I think she certainly handles that better than Michael Myers. So, you know, fine, whatever.
What do you think about my theory?
I think a lot of people from the Halloween fandom would like a word with you, and I can tell you if you take that argument to any convention, you're probably going to get an earful.
I'm going to do it.
You're asking for it.
I like being – sometimes people have very high latitudes of rejection. This goes back to our grad school days.
Sure.
So when that character was introduced and when Rachel was killed, they automatically hated her. Also, the way the director had her act and the dialogue that he had her do, I don't know. I think that they have a mental block about it because they're angry about it. But this is a very, if you think about it, Tina's a three-dimensional character. And she was,
and she was
forced into a situation that she did not ask in, and she ends up sacrificing herself to save a child. That's a redemption arc. She has a full arc in her half of this movie.
Okay, so let's pull it back a little bit, all right? You've stated your piece on Tina. I think you've made some great points. But it gives me pause to sort of consider what the director, who was French and very eccentric, had sort of in mind for her character. Because, again, you're talking about coming off Halloween 4, huge, critical, mixed, but commercially big movie. It was a hit. People enjoyed it for what it was. It wasn't the first movie, but fine. And you're coming in very quickly, mind you. They sort of rushed filming to get this in the next year. And you're killing off a final girl that had won over a lot of people. And then, never mind, killing her off the way they did, which was very, sort of crass and vulgar, replacing her with somebody completely different. And, almost decidedly unlikable. Again, you're talking about somebody really shrill voice. She's always kind of singing, songing to herself. And, despite your claims, is a little selfish.
She's doing that to put on a face for the world because
of
her inner depression that she suffers from.
Okay, well, I don't know if the general audience who's going to a Halloween 5 is there for that kind of story arc.
This is what I want. I want to go and just, I'm saying this kind of jokingly with all the institution and everything, but I would love to just go somewhere and say this with a straight face and with conviction and totally, like, earnestly. And just see what happens to the people when I share these thoughts with them.
I mean, you're just going to get a lot of eyebrow raises.
I think I could sway two or three of them. I think when they watch it now, they're going to be like, wow, that teddy bear scene was really emotional.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely a lot of different types of arcs for these female characters. Hers is a bit unique. And although I shouldn't say that because hers is unique. But if you consider, and you did watch 6, I know you did, the overall arc of Jamie Lloyd, right? Jamie Lloyd being, of course, Laurie Strode's daughter. Laurie Strode died in a car accident, quote unquote, who becomes sort of the heroine of the series in parts 4, 5, and 6. You look at that for a moment. You're talking about somebody, again, very vulnerable, very good, and Danielle Harris knocks it out of the park. That girl is just a hell of an actress for her age. Of course, by 6, they couldn't get her back for whatever reason, which was a huge mistake, I think. And I think most fans feel that way. Again, in 6, there's a lot of implied transgressions, I should say, and not to get too vulgar or sort of descriptive, but it's implied that Michael Myers rapes his niece. That is, on its own, incredibly weird,
For
a horror movie. Yes. So Halloween 6 opens with Jamie Lloyd, who is pregnant.
Oh, yeah. And that was her.
And she is sort of being overseen and manipulated by this cult, right? This cult of Thorn, who had, seems, kidnapped her, right, after the events of Halloween 5. So never mind this idea that they can control Michael Myers through some ancient rune nonsense. We're talking about opening Halloween 6, the 6th movie in your series, with an implied an action that Michael Myers would probably not do. I mean, he's a lunatic. He's a psychopath. Would he rape his niece? I don't think so. I mean, look, I'm not going to presume to know every kind of profile a serial killer will have that may or may not be incest. But it just seems a little out of character. So, yeah, you want to talk about female characters who got the raw end of the stick, no pun intended. I think Jamie takes the cake. And never mind the fact that they couldn't get Danielle Harris back. I think for the better, actually, had she had returned for that movie and gone through that character's, no spoilers, but finale, right? It probably would have sullied the fans' perspective of that story and that character even more than it had. And of course, she would go on later to return in Halloween 1 and 2 for the Rob Zombie films.
I really liked her a lot in those.
Yeah. And I think Rob knew that with the fan base. She was always a fan favorite, and it was a shame that she hadn't finished out her role as Jamie, but it was good. I think she was probably, for me personally, a very bright spot on those movies, which I otherwise just can't stand.
Now, what I do like about Rob Zombie's remakes is that they don't go to the way of Psycho. They don't go other way. Rob Zombie didn't just go, I'm going to remake some movie and just remake it. He remade Halloween as a Rob Zombie movie. And so for that fact, I like it. And I think what he, I think exactly what he set out to do, he did. For me with Rob Zombie is I like Devil's Rejects and I like them all, but they just exhaust me. And I just, as much as I embrace the writing in Devil's Rejects, the final shots and all that, in these films, I just can't get on board with their wavelength. So even though I can appreciate, like Collider said, the second one, Rob Zombie's second Halloween, was the second best in the series. And
that's a laugh.
So, but the thing is, I get it. I get why people like these movies.
So do I. And to your point about the first one, I will disagree slightly. I do think that he had an autonomy with his vision and did his thing and made that, you know, very grindhousey and exploitation filmy. That's just his MO. It's his style. That's fine. If that makes him an auteur, so be it. I do think that he did make some concessions halfway through, right? The first half of that movie is unabashedly Rob Zombie. It's got that broken home thing, tries to give reason and motivation. Whatever, fine. But, you know, the second half of that movie is more or less a spiritual remake of the first John Carpenter film. So I don't know if I agree entirely there, but, you know, two just went off the rails for me. And I can say this making one point, and there's many points I can make against that film, but I will say this. As much as I thought Scout Taylor Compton at the time with the first movie did, you know, did a fine okay job as Laurie Strode. Not my favorite, but, you know, serviceable. I have not encountered a female hero in any movie, to memory at least, more unlikable, really, than Laurie Strode in Halloween 2. Just all over the way. I mean, obviously, she's experienced trauma. She's going to have, you know, episodes. But just a patently unlikable character in Halloween 2, and I just couldn't get past it.
Which one is Danielle Harrison, where she's really likable and her dad is cool? The sheriff, the second one.
So, well, both. She does survive the events of the first movie, and I think that's kind of amusing because Rob had always set out to do just that one, and I think he had intended for her to die as Annie did in the first one, but she plays Annie. And her father, of course, being Sheriff Brackett, is, of course, as you know, played by legendary character actor who was in Brad Dourif, who played Chucky.
Yeah, he's likable.
And he's excellent. He's a very good choice. And, you know, it's interesting now that we're talking about industry icons. I was so excited, really, for Malcolm McDowell to step into the shoes of Dr. Sam Loomis.
Yeah.
And I was so disappointed. And maybe that wasn't his fault entirely. I think some of that was the script. But in the second one especially, him really hamming it up as this unlikable egomaniac, I thought it was a missed opportunity. I didn't feel like he was a hero. I didn't feel like anything, you know, for him. I didn't believe in his mission, right? Like Dr. Sam Loomis was from the original, the Donald Pleasance rendition. So anyways, just a few misfires that I just really couldn't get past. I'd much rather talk about the original Halloween 2, which... you know, I don't know if you remember this. There's a part where Dick Warlock, who plays the Shape in that, he finds out. This is the scene where he's in the parking lot and he runs into the young man holding a boombox. That happens to be Dick Warlock's son, which is kind of funny because he just sort of stands there. And he, in New York at least, and I'm sure this is true in any crowded pedestrian, you know, city area, on sidewalks, you move the fuck out of the way, right? This is a game of chicken. You play this constantly with people coming and going. Of course, Michael Myers doesn't give a shit. He just stands there and the guy bumps into him and expects him to move. But, of course, he does so gaining the knowledge that Laurie is at Haddonfield Memorial Hospital. So, but yeah, I just thought that was kind of amusing that Dick Warlock's son played that role with the boy in the cowboy cap.
Oh, wow.
And they replicate that. They replicate that in the new movie, sort of not with the son, of course. But if you notice in the previews, there's trick-or-treaters sort of hustling about, and they run into Michael, and then, of course, what I imagine is the now famous tracking shot where they follow Michael into a couple homes. I'm excited to see that pan out, no pun intended.
Well, that's the nucleus. Oh, Panaglide.
Exactly, right?
Hey, that was a deep one. Hey, so that's where this idea came from, is because he knocks that little child's candy down and doesn't care.
In the trailer.
Yeah. All right, so hey, I want to go back to Rob Zombie's real quick. I know you had a great segue into two, but I just want to say,
oh sure.
I was watching, I think it's the first one where he goes into the house and just destroys a house trying to kill Laurie Strode.
And that's the first one, right? And that's when he meets her mother and father, I believe.
And he levels a house.
Yeah, and actually that was a pretty effective scene. I'll give Rob Zombie that. It is very true to his brand, right? It's pretty intense. And I think at the time when I was sort of reviewing films as a critic for, you know, my student paper at FSU.
Hey, wait, you reviewed for them too?
I was editor in chief for the final year I was at that school.
When I was an undergrad, I wrote reviews for Star Wars. I got $5 an article from like 02 to 03 or 04.
Well, you may be happy or sad to know that I was responsible for bumping that pay to 10 an article.
I gave Attack of the Clones like 5 stars.
Oh, well, this wasn't my time, but I'm kind of glad I wasn't your editor then. I probably would have trashed that shit.
Yeah, my guy was super chill, and I don't think my stuff was that great.
Justin De La Cruz, maybe?
It was 02. He had like a... His name was like Sven or something. I don't know.
Okay, this was before my time.
Yeah, it was like 02. That's I used to write for them, and I did reviews for $5.
Yeah, that's how we did in the college days, but... That scene I really enjoyed. My friend at the time who reviewed the movie, which another anecdote in a second, he sort of mentioned, and rightfully so, that, you know, there's very few people that can make a kill as effective and brutal as intense as Rob Zombie. And I know that's certainly, it was that scene in Halloween 1 for him. And then, and of course, Olivia Spencer? As a nurse. Octavia Spencer. Thank you. And that scene, oh my goodness, it's just absolutely intense. And it's decidedly over the top, right? It's just vulgar for the sake of being vulgar. But, you know, I think, look, right, if you're going to take the Carpenter approach of minimalism and intention and what you don't see is scary and take that in a different direction, then sure, this makes sense. This is the natural opposite, but
the most, yeah. Tense scenes for Halloween for me were when he killed Danny Trejo. Because
mm-hmm.
he's
yeah,
a very
likable character.
And then I thought Daniel Harris was very likable mm-hmm. in that movie. So those are what I remember. I don't like the scenes where he's just wiping out dirt bags.
Yeah, and to the point about Daniel Harris's role as Annie, that was actually kind of difficult for me. And I imagine that was probably the same for a lot of other fans. And I think I read maybe some confirmation of that online as well. But, you know, you're considering this fan base, right, who grew up with these movies, saw her as a little girl, really just felt for her in those movies. And now you're seeing her, she's not only naked, but she's screaming for her life and she's been brutalized and she's just sobbing on the floor. And, you know, that's a testament to her acting ability as well. I very much, you know, I like that performance, but it's difficult. It's difficult to watch, especially if you grew up with those earlier sequels.
Yeah. So those would stick out for me. Just I don't know. Because when you can't be a jerk and kill jerks.
Right. And then I think, right, we talked about in Halloween 6 where the father, who is a drunken, belligerent, you know, violent, he hits his daughter
horrible,
at some point.
Horrible man.
I for one, enjoy those. I like when a movie, horror movie for this case, sort of singles out, right, the person who is definitely going to get it bad. And, there's, you know, there's some sadism, I think, that goes with that, and maybe some catharsis to some extent. It's just kind of fun, right? But
he just kills a jerk.
Yeah.
I think I was more honest. I'm not going back there because I want to keep going back, but I was more concerned about the sheets during that scene.
Right. Well, he clearly wasn't. He was drunk when he came home and was roaring, where's my bourbon or where's my dinner or whatever the hell he was saying.
I focus on some really weird things in movies.
Well, I think that's why they pay you the big bucks to write those Rotten Tomatoes stories.
So how about this? Let's take a quick break. Let's take a quick break. Let's look up if this has been a thing on forums about sheets, and we'll come back and we'll talk about more jerky antics of Michael Myers. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And during the break, Adam and I had an epiphany. And it's that Michael is a very messy man. So in Halloween 2, he kills a woman and there's just tons of blood on the floor, and then a dude walks in, slips on it, and concusses himself. Right?
That's right. And my point was, I'm not even sure exactly how she dies. This is Nurse Alves, I believe her name is, and sort of the Laurie's love interest, right? This male ENT comes upon one of the nurses. She's on the slab, and she's completely bled out, and she's got a tube running through her arm. We don't know how this happened. I don't know if he knocked her out and just hooked her up or what, but yeah, he sort of leaves a bit of a mess. You know, you think you'd tidy up after yourself after killing somebody. And, you know, sometimes serial killers like Jason or Michael will actually go that extra mile, as we discussed earlier, and do some of the laundry, at least attempt half of the laundry without detergent. But no, not this time. He did not bother.
You know,
I guess he was in a hurry.
You know what would have been better? Had he just thrown a sheet over the blood to wreck the sheet. So he's not even trying to clean up the blood. He just wants to wreck another sheet.
That's true. I would have killed two birds, one stone.
All right, so there's some stuff in H2O I want to talk about. Halloween H2O 20 years later, which I hate spelling out. Mm-hmm. But
Halloween water.
Halloween water. So, but before we do it, I'm just really curious. Can you give me the Halloween your Halloween movies in order?
Oh my goodness.
Would you like for me to go first, and then you can think about it, or do you want to go?
I mean, look, I've had more than 15 years to think about these things. So, yeah, that's fine. I think if we're just going to talk about sheer enjoyment and appreciation for each movie critically, we'll do that, because certainly you can get into the weeds about, you know, continuity and all these things that matter about Michael Myers. So certainly the first, that's not going anywhere. And this, of course, I should note, is you know, excluding the 2018 film. Of course, neither of us have seen that yet, to my knowledge. So, yeah, the first one. And then I will stand by, and I know this will be something of a disagreement with you, I will stand by Halloween 4. I think it is a excellent spiritual sequel. It gets the beats right. It has the suburban atmosphere and all that. It has a good final girl and very sympathetic characters. The mask is garbage, but other than that, I think it is a fine sequel with an excellent, by the way, excellent finale twist, which I will not state here. I think most people know it, and if you don't, you deserve to experience it. But Halloween 4, and then I'm going to throw a curveball. I love Halloween 3, and it is not including Michael Myers. We all know that by now, but it is an excellent cult genre film. If it were not called Halloween 3, it would probably, you know, be on a lot of people's radars as just being this really quirky and, as we were talking about yesterday, just incredibly dark, bleak movie.
There's some gnarly kills.
You don't kill kids in a lot of movies, and this one doesn't just kill kids. It does them in.
And then snakes, you know, come out of their heads and bite their parents.
It's snakes and bugs, and it's a very cynical movie. And not to get too deep into Halloween 3 just yet, but it is an excellent, and I'm gonna be Mark for a second and give this lofty defense of a movie that probably doesn't deserve it. It is an excellent commentary on capitalism and sort of a very cynical look, right, at marketing, because you've got this story based around Silver Shamrock, this corporation, this company that makes Halloween masks and, you know, cheesy gimmicks and this kind of thing. And their end game, of course, right, is to pretty much say, trick or treat, fuck you, kill everybody with their masks. So I love it for that reason. Tom Atkins, huge B-list star, stars in that. It's an excellent movie. I highly recommend it. Give it a second viewing if you sort of shrugged it off the first time. And then after that, I would say probably Halloween 2. Halloween 2 is a fair, if not somewhat dilutive sequel, right? Because they form that familial connection that John Carpenter was forced to do for a payday. So Halloween 1, 4, 3, 2, and then 6. I love 6. It's got a lot of problems. I like the theatrical cut. I think the producer's cut is good-ish. Some people prefer that one. But yeah, I think the atmosphere, right? We were talking about
good
the
tone.
Leaves.
Good setting of tone, you know?
Exactly. The camera work is pretty decent. You know, the mask is okay. I actually kind of like the mask. Michael is a pretty big guy in that movie. They got George Wilbur back from Halloween 4, and he's gained a little bit of weight. So yeah. I think a lot of fans know Halloween 6 is the one where Michael gained some substantive some weight for whatever reason.
And Paul Rudd gives a very He commits. He makes choices.
He does, and he's excellent in it, and it is his introductory movie. This is actually one that had just either filmed right before Clueless or had just been released. I can't remember which, but they do give him an introducing credit, and he's excellent. And obviously, he's gone on to bigger and better things, and we won't discuss too much of his past there, but he is excellent in it. He plays a great Tommy Doyle. And then I guess after that, it's an odd choice. I know Seven is pretty good on its own, H2O, but I would put that right after that. It's an excellent reunion movie, and you can tell Jamie Lee Curtis really wanted to give back to the fans. And it's interesting, you know, you've done seven of these movies, right? And they still just can't get the mask right. There were at least three masks in this movie, one by KGB effects, one by Greg Nicotero, one, I think, by Stan Winston, and there was even a CGI one. Oh my goodness, the movie was just plagued with problems with the mask, but we can get to that later. So anyways, Seven, I appreciate it for being a proper send-off, love letter to the fans. And then Five. I liked Five, it was okay, it had its quirks, it's a cheesy movie. It has a lot of problems, but I think it still captures that old farm, rural experience, right?
Tina.
Tina's in it too, I'll give you that. And then, you know, after that, I would give whatever I'm missing. I guess Halloween 1 from Rob Zombie, Halloween 2. And then, yeah, I'll be that guy. I think Halloween Resurrection is the most, you know, hollow, bankrupt shell of a movie. It just has no place, really. It is a very MTV style, let's hop on this Osborne's reality trend, and it just makes a mockery. I mean, there's plenty to nitpick, but, you know, Busta Rhymes, roundhouse kicking Michael Myers with a trick-or-treat motherfucker quip is just, that's it. That effectively killed the franchise before, you know, Zombie took it over, so.
I just love that moment, because I did not see that coming. I was like, what?
Though? Because you know, I saw it in the theater, and I think that was pretty heavily advertised.
Here's the thing. When you watch people trying to fight Michael Myers, like at Halloween 4, they're throwing like the old cowboy punches, you know, the haymakers, mm-hmm. and or they're throwing punches and Michael just catches them or blocks or parries them quite easily.
True.
He did not see a spin kick coming. So that
no, but
that
did we
offense,
play the Bruce Lee-isms to go with it?
He was watching it, Bruce Lee movie, earlier on. They set that up. They have Chekhov's Bruce Lee movie. Mm-hmm. And so when he does that, I know it's ridiculous. I know a lot of Halloween fans hated Life, but that was a very effective, offensive maneuver to fight Michael Myers because no one had tried to spin kick Michael Myers. No one had tried to throw a low spin kick to take out his legs. Everybody just throws stupid haymakers at him. So or they throw shovels at him. But this,
right.
His offense was very unique and it caught Michael off guard. And I thought that was an interesting thing to this movie. It's that Michael Myers is very cocky and he knows that people cower down to him. So when a man doesn't back down and throws a spin kick into him, he does not know what to do. So I like that Michael Myers became fallible, became human. And all it needed was a spin kick by Busta Rhymes.
Oh, I'm not taking the bait on that one, but, you know, it's interesting that
you know, it's
consider...
funny. I left so many trails for you to follow along.
Look, you got it's interesting. The same director, Rick Rosenthal, did Halloween 2, came back for Resurrection. And looking at these movies, it's so night and day to me. And I don't know why that is. And I remember before the movie came out, before Resurrection came out, I was obviously glued to the message board, right? And glued to these news items that would come out. And, you know, back then the internet was sort of in this transformative state, right? We didn't have the TMZ culture. We didn't have the Twitter. Not everything was spoiled. So, you know, I was clutching to things as I got them. And I remember very vividly reading that they were going to go back, right? They were going to go back and film the ending over. And this was going to be really good. And obviously, you know, working in the business as you do, you know, there's a lot of red flags that go with that.
Research.
It's not typically a good sign. And I think I remember even at that age laughing because they said, you know, ever since we saw Fatal Attraction and they filmed the scene over again at the end and just made a huge hit, made the film so much more effective. We were real inspired by that. So we're going to go back and do that with this movie. And I just, you know, you look at what they have in this movie at the very end, and it's just absolutely absurd. What was the original ending that they had in mind? Because by golly, you know, Busta Rhymes standing over a fried, crispy Michael Myers, calling him some Kentucky Fried motherfucker. Like, I shudder to wonder what that original ending was that they filmed.
And then he kills the lady from Blair Witch.
Well, which one is the one from Blair Witch? Because I know Katie Sackhoff was in that movie, and she certainly went on to way better
things. She gets decapitated from a knife.
She does, and that's a very strange scene. Very funny scene. It you know, sort of hobbles down the stairs, and I think she does so mid-scream, so you hear sort of the residual windpipe. But yeah, she went on to bigger, better things with Battlestar Galactica. But are you referring to the Bianca Kegelich?
No, at the end, at the very end, they wheel him in, and they're like, oh, we got Michael Myers. He's fried.
The mortician, then.
Yeah, okay. The mortician. She's from Blair Witch, and she got...
I didn't know that. Yep. I didn't know that.
So she's...
Wait a minute. The original Blair Witch, the Heather... What's her face? I didn't realize that.
I was just all Langenkamp, but that's Nightmare on Elm Street.
No, that's the other lad. Yeah. Maybe it's not Heather, but anyways, so I didn't know that.
She's been wiped out, maybe, by Blair Witch and Michael Myers. That's a good... It's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, did you know we were going to... I was going to segue into, like, you know, I think it was, what, Bill Paxton, who was, like, the only person who had been killed by a Terminator, an alien, and a Predator. But it got me thinking... You know, there is an actor who played both Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees. It was Tom Lerner, I think, and he played both in remote spots. He didn't play them for the entire movies, but I thought that was pretty cool, just based on, like, oh, yeah, you need some guy to walk around and kill people? Yeah, we know guy.
Dig it. Hey, so as, like, someone who does a lot of writing, you do a lot of editing, you know all this kind of stuff, I wrote an article that's coming out next week, and in this thing about horror franchises, I wrote, Friday the 13th is a Citizen Kane hotter of, like, you know, bad movie horror franchises. Mm. What do you think? Citizen Kane hotter. Kane hotter.
So I was going to explain for your listeners, in case they weren't hip to this, Kane Hodder, of course, the actor who is, I think, the fan favorite for... who's represented Jason on film. I like him the best. He is excellent. To your pun, let's go in on that. I think that works. I'm excited to see that in print.
I hope they leave that in, because if they do...
Well, you know, you got an A-B test for optimization, so hopefully they at least give you that, characteristic.
I'm not going to give one line away, but if this big article, if they allow this line that I wrote, the first sentence of one of the article, if they allow it to happen, I'm gonna retire from writing, because I wrote a line that I'm very proud of that I don't think they're gonna let get in.
Is it just incredibly tongue in cheek, or is it?
Oh, it's really good. No, it's not crass at all. It's a pun.
I don't see why they wouldn't leave it in, but I mean, I'm excited.
It's good. It's really good. I had a hard time writing around it.
It sounds like it was unavoidable.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so. I'm going to drop my 10 real quick.
Yes, please. I want to hear yours.
Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
One.
It better be the Carpenter one.
H2O.
Mm-hmm.
Five.
Interesting.
Because I just think it's weird, and I think it has personality.
No, I completely agree with that. It is probably the most unique of, I guess, the pre-H2O movies.
Then I'll go six.
Okay.
Then I'll go four.
Okay.
Then three, then Rob Zombie's Halloween 2,
okay,
and then Halloween 2, and then Rob Zombie's Halloween, and
really,
and then Resurrection.
I mean, insofar as we agree on the final one, I can see that, but wow, that's a pretty unique list. And I'll tell you, just again, from having these discussions for years as a teenager, you're not going to find too many people's lists that's going to match that. That's pretty buck wild.
I'll stand toe-to-toe with them, and I will infuriate them, because I can keep a very straight face, and I can make very good counter-arguments, and I can listen to what they're saying and agree with them, and I won't say but. I really like what you're saying, but for me, what I really appreciate, and I'll kind of spin their words, and then by the end of it, they'll have my list as their list.
I don't know. You're gonna have to see if Rotten Tomatoes is gonna pay for a film crew to come out and to Pasadena if you want to go to the convention, because I'd watch that.
Oh, just try to convince Halloween.
Like that famous meme, right? I don't know what it's called officially, but there's that guy right outside of a school campus, and he's got some sign that says blank 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 debate me or change my mind, right? That's the new meme du jour. on the internet, and that can be you. You just go out to Pasadena and just have a table set up and say, here's my list. Prove me wrong.
Ooh. The thing I like is that they're all opinions. So no matter what people tell me, I'm like, you're right according to what you feel, but this is what I think. And I'm not trying to sway your mind. This is just what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And then you get them angry, and then you've won. Because the problem with opinions, like, there is no right or, you know, like, it doesn't, this sure. list, every list is going to be different. Like, it'd be weirder if our lists were the same, statistically.
Well, yours would be right then.
Exactly. Wait, you just got me. All right, so that was a deep conversation. I'm going to go to Pasadena now.
You should. Hey, if you do, do it for me, because I would love to.
All right, I got to ask your thoughts about something. And sure. This takes place in Halloween 6, where, like Batman in The Dark Knight Rises, Michael Myers jerkily burns a symbol into a bunch of hay. How do you feel about that?
Well, look, I mean, it's a farmhouse. What damage was really done? Actually, I was kind of more surprised the fact that he burns a symbol of Thorn, right, which is the supposed ancient rune that motivates him, controls him, what have you. But yeah, I remember seeing that and thinking, well, how did he make it so controlled? It's hay. It's a barn. It would have burned instantly. So I think I'm more impressed, if nothing else. But, you know, look, you think about how these things happen, right? Especially in Batman, where how the hell did he get up there? Like, yeah. did he rig this giant bat logo in advance? How did he do this?
Bruce
Wayne, but... Right, yeah.
They were searching for the missile with, like, heat guidance, and they couldn't find it. So you knew that people had heat signatures over that area. So they must have seen Batman doing that.
You have to also consider, not to get too far into Batman, but the city is at stake. There is a bomb. It's got a timer. You, being Batman, right, have taken this mission on to save and protect. When does it possibly occur to you in this decision-making process to stop everything and say, listen, you know, it'd be fucking real sick as if I took 2 hours, 3 hours maybe, and set this really badass burning bat up on the bridge? That would be so sick. I don't know. I don't know if I can reconcile that. Me, as a citizen of Gotham, would say, I'm sorry. Excuse me, what?
Wait, who's he
talking? My life is at stake.
Who's he talking to when he's doing all this stuff?
This is Gordon. Gordon, actually. He makes this very grand entrance. He says, I'm not going to pretend to know how to do Christian Bale's Batman voice, but he goes, light it up. And he takes the flare, right? He takes the small-ass flare, which, you know, how do we know that Batman knew that Gordon was going to have a flare? Anyways, I'm not going to get into Batman right now. This is a Halloween podcast, but, you know, it still bothers the mind after these years.
I told you when our podcast is free flowing. I wasn't lying.
Oh yeah, no, I'm for it. But Sorry, go on.
I get people in the trap conversations, and I just go on tangents. All right. So, also in the Halloween series, he steals many vehicles. So in the first one, he steals Loomis's, right? Mm-hmm. In the fourth one, he steals a tow truck. In the fifth one, he steals the muscle car. In Halloween H2O, he steals a 71 Buick Skylark. And then he steals another car, which I had all the exact specs on, but I forgot
you
that date.
You did, I read that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was like one of my big ones. That was one of my first big ones. I got all the attention. And he steals a lot of vehicles in this. How do you feel about that, Adam?
I mean, look, the fact that he can drive is its own sort of myth and mystery, right? We talk about the first movie, right, where Loomis chews out Dr. Wynn, which, again... deep cut for the fans. Dr. Wynn, the guy he's talking to in that scene, would go on to be the quote-unquote man in black, right, in Halloween 6. Sort of a weird cherry pick for a villain. But at any rate, you know, he tells him he didn't know how to drive a car. Well, he knew how to last night. Maybe someone gave him lessons. So perhaps, you know, in Michael's limited experience driving, maybe this is all just an exercise to test drive, right? Maybe he's still finding his favorite car. Maybe he wants to invest in one, right? And he's just not happy.
You know how that's funny. The 2 years that he was away between 4 years that he was away between Halloween H2O and Halloween Resurrection was 4 years. Maybe he went to Europe and just drove the Autobahn, and he drove the mountains out there to get better at it. What do you think?
Do you think he did that without his mask on, or do you think he kept the mask?
I mean, he always has his mask on, right? When the hermit raises him back to health in six, does he still have
his mask?
In five. Does he still have his mask on?
No. As a matter of fact, he doesn't.
Oh, so he doesn't have it on.
He wakes up, and there's a scene where he sort of, I don't want to say caresses, but he sort of, you know, touches it in a way, and he slips it on, of course, does the hermit in. But even then, you know, like even in four, there's a little bit of a part where he's taking out the mechanic at the gas station, and he has the shootout with Loomis. He's got his bandages on, which actually I would have preferred seeing more of. I think that's a pretty frightening visage. I know Jason had something similar in Friday the 13th Part 2. With his sort of bag over the head, and he had an eye cut out. But yeah, maybe he does want to keep his mask off. And that's to another point we can get to later. But when Michael kills a number of dogs. We've talked about this, I think, previously. And I don't know what the dog body count is. But there's a part in Part 1 where Loomis and Brackett see the remains of what I would presume a dog is. I can't remember if it's a dog or if it's a skunk. I think they might say skunk. Do you think Michael is eating these pets? Do you think that he eats dogs? Because I don't know where else he's getting his foodless face if this guy's not going to drive through.
In Resurrection, he was eating rats. So yeah.
That's true.
I just assume he's munching on animals.
Well, hold on a second. And not to say that he doesn't eat rats. He may very well. But if my memory serves, and you would know better because you just rewatched it, I think, isn't the rat a prop, right? Isn't that something that they put in there to sort of freak out the contestants rather on that reality show, because it does squirm very fake, like it's half eaten and goes so I think that was actually part of the dangertainment, quote-unquote, scare tactics.
He was living under the house. They didn't go under the house, did they?
I don't know if they did. I just remember the rat sort of shaking and being half eaten and thinking that looks awfully fake. So I'll table that one. Maybe he does eat rats, but I thought that might have been something that was planted. But you're right. He has to eat something. I just don't know what he's eating.
He's eating animals.
Yeah, probably.
Or he's just going into gas stations and stealing stuff because he likes to steal stuff.
What do you think he gets from the gas stations, though? Do you think he's more of like a hot dog or a taquito guy?
Yeah, I mean, he needs protein. I don't think he's big into chips, right? Because then you got to lift your mask up. Like, a lot, right? So he's probably going, like, he's not doing something that he could just one at a time, right? So he's probably going for, you're right, hot dogs. He's probably getting Snickers, because you can just take a couple bites of that. You know what I mean? He's not just popping his mask up.
It could be argued that if you eat a Snickers, you're less hangry, and you might be cured of your psych problems, maybe. Yeah,
he just becomes like Benedict Cumberbatch. He's a really nice guy.
Perhaps that's the new Snickers campaign in ahead of the new Halloween movie.
If you eat Snickers, you become Danny McBride.
Well, yeah, or that, or you just, you know, stop killing teenagers as Michael Myers.
Yeah. So he's not eating Snickers. I could see him crushing a Reese's cup.
No wrong way.
I think he likes gum.
Do you think that?
I think it keeps him busy because he doesn't do much. Most of the time.
Well, he breathes a lot, and that's the thing. I think he likes breathing a lot. You can hear, from time to time, they'll have the mask audio, and you can kind of hear the... And I know they do that in the new movie. I think they had Nick Castle come back and do audio just for that, too. But, yeah, I don't know.
I think he likes... Well, on his downtime, when he's just sort of chilling.
Maybe, yeah.
I think he'll
All I know is his diet is definitely much different leading up to the events of Halloween 6. Because, like I said, George Wilbur was a much bigger man than he was in his Halloween 4 role.
I'm telling you. Because, what, he was with... So, he had disappeared for a while, correct, Michael Myers? Or was he working with the cult?
Well, working is a pretty weird way to put it. I think that the implication was that this cult was controlling him.
Is he Vader and that guy's Grandma Tarkin?
I was gonna say Vader and the Emperor, but yeah, I guess that works too. I don't know if they work together though. It seems to me like, especially in the producer's cut, which I don't know if you got a chance to check out yet, but I won't get too far into it for those who haven't and want to experience it, but there's definitely some, there's some scenes toward the end that imply that there's a lot of control happening. And that's what I don't like about it. And again, I won't get too deep into it, but this idea that, right, Michael can be controlled with some, you know, lousy ancient stones. Very Halloween 3, in my opinion. I'm not sure I was on board with that. So,
but isn't Halloween 2 kind of to blame for that? Because they said they had him writing stuff on chalkboards?
Well, true, but I don't know if I want to go so far as to say that the events in Halloween 6 really dictated much of his motivations, right, in Halloween 2. I want to believe he was just nuts and said, hey, it's a fun word to scare people with. I'm going to do it in blood, which I don't even know whose blood he used.
I like this accent you use for him.
Yeah, no, that's my Michael Myers accent.
In 6, he does another jerky thing, which I want to, because you said it was kind of a nice thing, but I think it's a jerky thing, is he hands somebody a towel when they're in the shower.
Yes, the boyfriend.
So, yes, he hands him a towel, but he also does it kind of snickering to himself, which is kind of a jerky move, because he could just wipe him out, but instead he's messing with him.
So, yeah, and to paint the listeners a picture here, we've got some post-coital shower action.
No, pre.
Is it pre?
Yeah, because he's like, I have to take a shower.
No, man. I'm. They have very quick candlelit sex. So I'll prove you. They have a sex scene. We can agree on that.
Yeah.
He does die. Obviously, he's dead after the sex. So anyways, my point is, he takes a shower afterwards. She's waiting in the bedroom. You know, he hands this guy a towel, which I guess is just a reason to show off the thorn tattoo. Michael has this curse of thorn tattoo to tell us this is why he's controlled by a cult. Anyways, point being, hands the guy a towel, right? Dries himself off, starts looking in the mirror. Michael didn't even bother to defog the mirror. He didn't even bother to, like, wipe it down. He waits for the guy to check himself out, and sure enough, he slits his throat. Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty dick move. I don't know. At least he let him finish, I guess, kind of.
Yeah, I have a question. When he ties the guy up in the tree, does he steal those Christmas lights?
Right, so the Barry, whatever his name is, he's the shock jock,
yeah.
Very clearly modeled after Howard Stern. And I actually like that kill, because back to my point, I kind of appreciate when you see the transparently shitty characters get their end. But yeah, how he gets him in the tree, he kills him in a van, right?
Yeah.
Very brutally, actually. I think it's implied that he sort of stabs him in the nuts. But, yeah, he gets him tied up into this tree with Christmas lights. And that's, I think, the bigger question is, where the hell did he get these Christmas lights? It's Halloween time.
Wait, where'd he plug them in? Were they on?
Oh, gosh, I think they might have been.
I need to watch this movie again, because that means he needs an extension cable, which he stole.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is just one of those things he picked up at the hardware store, because we know he's a big patron of those. But, you know, I'm trying to remember, A, were they lit, B, were they Christmas, or were they Halloween? Because Halloween does have their own lights. They're orange. But I think I'd remember them if they were orange.
I don't know if they were on. I have this movie taped. I DVR'd it. I'll just watch it again.
Okay.
And if it's, so he steals all this. He's a klepto.
Oh, absolutely. But I think that's, you know, I think there's a Winona Ryder and then there's a Michael Myers, right? So
yeah.
you sort of let certain things fly in the face of greater transgressions.
Now, we're going to jump back to 4, because there's one that you have in 4, then there's one that I have.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure I'll think of other ones, but I think one of my favorite moments, and this sort of goes back to his mannerisms, right, as a cat, someone's a bit mischievous and sneaky and sort of waits, right, for the right moment. He's not Jason, right? He doesn't just break down a fucking door and stab you in the face. He is in the house that is now locked up, right? They barricaded it and they're fearful for their lives because they know he's out there, and there's a cop on duty to protect them, the heroes, right? And he certainly takes the cop out, you know, and I think this is done off screen, so, you know, this cop who's sitting guard, right, in this rocking chair, and at some point the sheriff's daughter, is it Kelly? It might be mistaken, but the sheriff's daughter, who is very famously wearing a cops do it by the book shirt.
The prop guy made that. I love it.
He did. Bucky the prop guy. Yeah. Bucky's got a great scene as well, but she is talking to herself. Little does she know. She's trying to talk to the cop, and she lights a candle only to see this sort of disembodied corpse. And I actually have a hard time understanding what exactly is going on with this cop's body. His head's in a weird, awkward place. But
it showed about four times.
Yeah, it's a little odd. And at any rate, she gasps in horror, of course, finding his body. And good old Michael, who has been apparently for a couple minutes now, at least, sitting in a rocking chair, rocking back and forth, just like this, you know, Norman Bates' mother, right? Just sort of hanging out. And he's got a shotgun in his hands. And of course, being Michael Myers, you know, a shotgun is very unbecoming. It's not part of his MO. He does not shoot the sheriff's daughter. He implores instead to impale her to a wall with the shotgun, which I guess is a bit more of a callback, really, right, to Bob in Halloween 1. And of course, right after he does that, he gives her a very small, brief glance, admiring his handiwork. So I actually appreciated that callback. But yeah, kind of a weird setup on his part, just to sort of wait for somebody to find a body and then go, okay, now it's going to kill you.
You know what else he does in 4? He hates ice cream.
Wait, what does he do? Oh, that's right. They go for ice cream.
Oh, no, but they turn off the power. He turns off the power in the town. And he plunges it into darkness. So all the ice cream in the town basically gets null and void.
I like that that's your immediate conclusion after he takes out Bucky the Electrician, right?
Yeah.
He finds Bucky the Electrician, who, as Mark mentioned just now, that served as the prop master for this movie. He takes Bucky and after some sass, right, he decides to throw Bucky's body into some generator and it all but leaves Haddonfield in darkness, which is actually kind of sick. I like that idea. You're not going around, right, like to individual cabins in Friday the 13th. You're not cutting that phone cord. It's just one fell swoop. You're taking out the town's power.
Now, you're going to be proud of me. When I was working in a movie theater in college, I would refuse to wear a name tag with my name on it, so I'd be Sven or Biff. But one of them was Bucky that I wore for the longest time. So at AMC Theaters, I was Bucky. And one time this customer got kind of annoyed at me and went up to the manager's like, that guy Bucky's a real dick. And he said that to a manager who I was friends with. And she said she had to like do everything to stop from laughing. She's like, oh, okay, I'll take care of him. But yeah,
I want to believe that was inspired by Halloween 4. Clearly it wasn't. But what was it that compelled you to go with that name?
I just like Bucky. Like, I just thought it was like a very... I just enjoyed the name. Like, it's a good
all-American name. I don't know if you see it too much anymore.
And I was Biff for a long time. And then
Biff,
Sven.
Of course. Yeah. Yep. Sven, well, Sven, you look like a Sven. You're very Scandinavian.
So, but yeah, he takes out all the power, right? And ice cream. He knows that they like ice cream. And then he goes, they like ice cream, so I'm taking the power out. No other reason. He could have left the power on. But he's like, if they kill me, and they want ice cream, it's going to be melted. He played the long game.
That's the long game to you, huh?
Yeah.
I just don't know.
He took out the power, so if he died, ice cream was gone.
So what you're essentially telling me, right, is that when Rachel picks up Jamie from school, sees she's very distressed for whatever reason, she's been bullied at school, she tempts her, right, with some ice cream, 2 scoops, she makes the point of that. And they want to get a costume. So not only are you telling me that Michael shits the bed on their experience by, you know, taking a mask at the drugstore and scaring poor Jamie, but to go the extra mile or the long game, as you're telling me, by ruining their ice cream experience. Yep. I don't know. I don't know if I buy it.
So during this time, you don't really know where he is. He is going house to house, store to store, opening up every freezer.
And what's to stop people, pray tell?
Well, they're out hunting. They're out hunting for him. So no one's in their houses. There's a big manhunt. There's a riot hunting Michael. And so while they're doing this, he's a cat. He's slipping from house to house, opening all the freezers and all the stores. So when everyone comes home, everything in the refrigerators are done.
I suppose so. Yeah. I mean, and perhaps perhaps this made me think of something. And you can continue, actually. Sorry, I was going to.
I mean, there's no way to prove me wrong.
No, you're right. Technically, there isn't. I guess you'd have to ask Alan McElroy, the screenwriter. But, yeah, it got me thinking about his decision to pick up the same, or at least a similar, right, white Captain Kirk mask at the drugstore in Halloween 4. You know, maybe he did that because of his legacy, right? And this sort of segued, or justified, rather, his reason, because I think it was like halfway into the movie, you've got these very belligerent rednecks, right, who want to, you know, shoot up the town, protect their people, be a vigilante mob. But you've got these other idiots running around, right, as Michael Myers playing goofs and spoofs.
Yep.
And of course, we all know where that leads, right? These vigilante rednecks. His name was Ted Hollister. Rest in peace, Ted. But yeah, maybe that was part of his end game, or his long game, rather.
Yeah, he hated,
right,
Ted.
To confuse. That's not where I was going, Mark.
He hates Ted.
Okay, maybe there was a grudge with Ted. Maybe young Michael Myers, being 6 years old, somehow
was
knew
bullied.
Ted Hollister, right? Whatever. Maybe he was his babysitter before Judith. I don't know. My point was...
Remember, he takes two masks at the store. So I bet you he went to Ted's house and just dropped it off.
Does he take two? I thought he took one.
You can't prove me wrong.
Okay, fine. Whatever. He takes two masks that's not seen on the movie. But my point was, perhaps he does this so that he understands, hey, yeah, I've got this legacy and legendary status in this town. Surely there will be idiots out there, right, who are trying to parody and make light of my legacy by running around in Michael Myers masks, which makes my position, right, slipping in and out of streets and neighborhoods, all the easier. You're no longer singled out.
Yep.
So perhaps that was the reason.
And he's doing a little strut. He puts a backpack on, so people are like, oh, he's dressed like Michael Myers, but he's not Michael Myers. He's not walking like Michael Myers. He's waving to people. He's throwing, like, peace signs, doing spin moves.
Yeah, I don't remember George Wilbur having a unique Michael Myers walk. Certainly, each actor had their own, some better than others. As much as I love Dick Warlock of Halloween 2, I do think that his walk was a bit robotic. And I like that the more natural, just sort of not a care in the world stroll is more befitting of the character.
You know, in the original director's cut of 4, they cut one scene out where it was Michael for 3 minutes recreating the opening sequence of Saturday Night Fever on the streets of Haddonfield.
I somehow missed that one on the Ultimate Halloween message boards.
Yeah, he's just spinning, staying alive. He's putting $5 down on new shirts. He's getting cans of paint, staring at people, trying to talk to people.
Yeah. Wow, it's like a whole other side of Michael Myers I hadn't considered.
Yeah, but he still hates ice cream.
Okay. Well, I guess it would be difficult to eat that with a mask on.
All right, so hey, let's start wrapping this up. I just want to get your final thoughts about Halloween. I want to get your favorite jerky moment and just kind of any other thoughts you got.
I mean, look, I've had a lot of movie fetishes. I think when I was very young, in the early 90s, because this was after Tim Burton's 1989 Batman, where I was like, you know, fully immersed in film and just being very into the process, right? And just being awed by the spectacle of it all. And this was well before, you know, grade school. I was just obsessed because my mom would show me these movies and I would marvel at how they were made, right? And I think when you talk about movies that, like Jaws, right, were very scrappy, things didn't work out the way they wanted to with the shark, maybe the budget was a bit constrained, but with people who had a very singular vision, as John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, the late Deborah Hill, did, those are the movies that stay with me. And I think certainly after my Batman and, you know, whatever Tim Burton phase I went through, Halloween really was, and I guess still is to this day, really my big movie obsession. And I think, you know, anytime anybody asks me what's your favorite movie, It's Halloween, and I don't have a problem saying that, because I think especially with what would presumably be a very legitimate return to form with the sequel, you've got some air of legitimacy here. This is a very original movie that was made for $300,000, right, in 21 days by some film school nerds who really just had a lot of passion for the project and certainly wanted to make money, but, you know, by virtue of their spirit and enthusiasm, pulled off what was at the time the most successful independent film, I guess, until Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, weirdly enough. But, you know, the sort of mythology that would come to pass following the first movie is certainly its own beast and certainly has its own highs and lows. But I, you know, I've come to love all of them, perhaps not Resurrection as much, but even, you know, slices perhaps of the Halloween movies Rob Zombie created. And I just think they're so fun. They don't take themselves too seriously. And there are certainly movies, slasher movies, that do that. And I think with what I've seen, and certainly with what I've read, with Jamie Lee returning for this one by David Gordon Green, that there's a lot more to be said, right? With what you can do with this genre, because it wasn't seen as legitimate for a long time, and it's very adaptable. We've seen a lot of things done, commentary rise, and with satire, right, with the Scream movies. And I think, you know, what we're about to see, hopefully, right, if things go well, is another revival of the genre, and I'm here for it. And you know, sometimes you get really cynical film snobs out there, which, you know, to their credit, are allowed to have their opinions and their curmudgeonly ways about this. But, you know, another movie, who cares? It's bankrupt of originality, what have you. You're never not going to have that 1978 original. So for my money, you know, this new one is good, which it seems to be. I'm excited to be here for it, and I'm looking forward to the movies to come.
And if those people are arguing about a lack of originality, The Great Train Robbery was one of the first, like, the longest, you know, full movies made, and it was remade a year later. Nosferatu was a ripoff of Bram Stoker. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were...
And Scarface, and I believe Maltese Falcon, of all movies, I believe is also a remake.
Yeah, and like, you know, I showed my students Scarface. It was pretty awesome. They loved it. 32, and like, Hays Code. But
Howard Hawks, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, these movies have always been cannibalizing each other. When Dracula hit big, there's another Dracula. When Frankenstein hit big, there's another Frankenstein. So sure. I mean, it's always been there. So when people are complaining about it, I think they're doing it with kind of a short-sightedness, because when you look at film as a whole, we've always been copying things. We've always been stealing. So that's my thing.
Absolutely. And I, not to belabor the point, but I do think, and again, this is assuming this movie is a hit, I, for one, am absolutely on board with this concept of divorcing from sequentiality, right, from continuity, because for so long, and maybe the Marvel movies buck this with their stuff, but you get a movie in a series, right, and maybe it's not so good, and then you sort of have this duty, right, to make amends, to make clearer and rectify the mistakes of the past. I don't know of a series that's retconned and dismissed continuity or logic, for that matter, more than Halloween. And the fact that we've got Jamie Lee Curtis returning for this role after Halloween H2O, after she was killed off in Resurrection, I just think that speaks volumes. And I would love for more movies to embrace that, right? Don't worry about continuity. Don't worry about those horrible sequels that were produced early. Start over if you have to. And maybe that's a bad argument when it comes to originality, but I, for one, think if there's a good story to be told, you know, fuck sequel logic.
Got it. I think Halloween H2O should still be in there. And I think this movie should have started with him killing Hartnett and then going after her.
I wonder if they could get Hartnett back. He was a pretty big deal at the time. Actually, I think
that was his first movie.
It was. This franchise has a history of introducing would-be stars.
They Paul Rudded him.
Mm-hmm.
I like him. He's good. I like him a lot in 30 Days of Night. And I also like him a lot in Penny Dreadful. I think
Know what you like him in. I know what you like him in. You didn't say it. The Faculty.
Nah, he's too angsty in that one.
The Faculty is a wonderful, spirited remake of Invasions of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, you're a Faculty fan?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, man. We got a lot to talk about coming up.
Okay.
All right. So, no, this was a lot of fun. And I also just want to say my favorite things that came from this were Tina was let down by the system. Michael Myers hates ice cream. And we had a bunch of other great stuff in here. But I appreciate you allowing me to kind of wind you up here, man. And I really appreciate you coming on, because you know more about Halloween than – you've forgotten more about Halloween than I know. So this was a lot of fun. So you down to do another one in the future?
Oh, I think this was a wholly cathartic experience. I mean, I've had years and years of pent-up obsessions to dispense. So please make use of me in the future. And this was – certainly an honor. This is actually my first podcast, so thank you for humoring me on that, and I hope I was the least bit resourceful.
Nah, man. I wouldn't invite you back if I wasn't a fan. This was fun, dude. So, yeah, so for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Adam Clement, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.